This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Chris Massaro, professional sports bettor, will join us. We will talk some MLB playoff races as we head into the final weekend. Some NFL, some college. Excited to talk to Chris, and I'll get to baseball in a minute. I'll actually get to a WNBA rant. I just need to get off my chest in a minute because that league just continues to embarrass itself. But I'll start with the NFL. Dallas gets a win, a much-needed win, 20-15. And, boy, this is why betting the NFL, man, it's just there's nothing, there's no other sport like this where it's just the luck of the draw, the coin flips. All, I mean, all you can do is try to get the best of the number and hope for the best. This line was bouncing around all week from 4 to 6, back down to 4. It was a weird cycle in terms of the line movement, and games don't usually land on 5. Well, this landed on 5, and it looked like it was going to land on 5. Dallas was going to maybe run out the clock or punt, and they get enough yardage where, like, less than a minute left by the game, the game was completely unwatchable. Flag after flag after flag. Neighbors is a great player. Dak had a good game. Jones wasn't awful, but the game itself was awful. Al Michaels needs to retire. Listen to Al Michaels for 3 hours is painful. He can't see anymore. He's grumpy, which, look, it was a tough game to watch with the officials and everything, but he's always annoyed by everything. He needs to just, be in bed by 8 o'clock. He can't see anymore. He has no idea what's going on. But this game lands on 5 as Aubrey comes out to kick a 40-something yarder, and with the 60-plus yarder he made earlier, with how great he's been, you figure, all right, this is easy money. Dallas is going to win by 8. This is going to land 8, except he misses it, pushes it right, and it lands right on 5. So it's a hard league to pick, man. You just got to hope the ball bounces your way. I don't know. Did Dallas deserve the cover? I'm not sure. It was kind of a tight game. Giants moved the ball, just couldn't finish drives with the 5 field goals. It's weird. They were in a game that came a couple weeks ago against Washington where they gave up nothing but field goals. Now they're in a game today where they kicked nothing but field goals. Joseph had a nice game for Dallas. Dallas got the early couple of touchdowns, then just kind of hung on for dear life. It was a strange game plan. There was one time in the second half, Dallas gets the ball. They get a big run, gets called back with a holding, of course, because there was a flag on basically every play, unless there were multiple flags. But they get a big run, called back, 1st and 20. Then they do a little like run up the middle for nothing, another run, and then they just dump it off like 3rd and 12. They just throw a little dump, like a 1 or 2 yard pass to the fullback and punt, and basically just give up on the possession. Just an odd game. But if you look at Dallas's schedule, this is one Dallas desperately needed here, because the schedule coming up is just not a situation where if you're 1 and 3, I don't know that they would have gotten out of that hole with the games they have coming up. At Pittsburgh, who looks a little bit better. Now that's October 6th, then October 13th, and he's Detroit, then the Leaf. So you got Steelers, Lions, 49ers, Falcons, Eagles, Texans, then at Commanders, who look a little better. They play the Giants again, you play the Bengals. So this is a brutal schedule, a brutal stretch here for Dallas, where 1 and 3, again, it's dangerous to start crossing these teams off early, and we don't have to do that because they won and they're 2 and 2. But this was one they needed to get, and they did get it. A lot of injuries, though, in this game. Parsons, Lawrence, at the end of the game. Neighbors, who's, again, just incredible, 12 catches. It took the broadcast a little bit to realize, like 5 minutes to realize, oh, Neighbors got knocked out on that 4th down play late in the game. Another one where Michaels is just asleep. So injury concerns going forward, something to keep an eye on. That is the football. Dallas gets a win, 2 and 2. Giants, again, not terrible tonight. Not terrible. Jones was okay. You at least have Neighbors to hang your hat on. I mean, it's not a good team, but Dable's a good coach, and it's not going to be a playoff team, but at least a respectable effort. It's not like last year on prime time where they came out against Dallas at home and lost 40-0 or whatever it was. So we will see what happens going forward. Before I get to baseball here, just quickly, my picks. I don't have a ton I love this week in the NFL. I am going to go Steelers, Colts under 40. Again, I'm just going to ride the Steelers unders until they do me wrong. They're 3-0 to the under. When you look at their scores, it's 20-10 and 13-6 and 20-12. They want to play these games in the teens. At some point, it's going to burn me, but I'll go back to the well here with Steelers, Colts under 40. I will also go Eagles, Bucks under 43. If you look at the Eagles, Devontae Smith and AJ Brown might not play. They've got linemen hurt. I think it's going to be a run-heavy script here for Philly. And remember, they went to Tampa last year, and Hurts did not play well. Todd Bowles did a good job shutting him down, held Hurts to 9 points. And the other side of the ball, Tampa plays really slow. Tampa plays the third slowest pace in the league, only 54 plays per game. So they're going to slow it down. Philly, with their injuries and offensive line issues, are probably going to slow it down because they have to. So, I look for, I don't know, like a 22 to 17, one of these games where long possessions, field goals. I think this is another under here. As far as sides, if I had to pick one, I haven't picked on or against this team, I don't think, all year. I would lay the 4.5 with Cincy. I think this is a get right spot. I think at 1-3, you could say, hey, we've still got a lot ahead of us with the Ravens not pulling away. And who knows, maybe they lose to Buffalo this week. The Steelers, we haven't played them yet. Maybe we can catch them. The Browns maybe aren't any good. And Cincy, they finally going to have Chase and Higgins and get their feet under them a little bit. And are we really at the point where, all right, one good performance from Dalton and the Panthers, we trust them now? I'm not sure. Bengals winning this game by a touchdown to me is reasonable. So I will take Cincinnati. Then one college one quickly here is I like Louisville plus the 6.5. Brohm is the Louisville coach, has been a great coach as an underdog. Notre Dame is a running team. They don't really have a downfield passing game. And Louisville's got some monsters up front defensively. They got some NFL players on their defensive line. So I think Louisville has enough defensively to keep it close. I'll take the 6.5 with Louisville. So Steelers, Colts under 40, Bucks, Eagles under 43, Bengals minus 4.5. And I will go Louisville plus the 6.5. And I guess I should talk Georgia, Bama. I think Georgia's going to win. Talked about it a little bit with Stuckey the other day. That's the big game of the weekend. Man, so much going on with the playoffs, the NFL, and then college. You almost forget about some of these college games. Georgia, Bama, and this is what's tough about the new format with 12 teams getting in. Whoever loses is still, not dead. Not that they would have been in the 14 playoff, but even in the 14 playoff, you lose one, you better not lose another. Here, you lose one, okay, you don't want to lose one, but you're far from dead. I'll go Georgia. I still think Bama's sort of in between, 1 foot in, 1 foot out between the Saban era, the DeBoer era. I mean, how often do you get Georgia laying under a field goal? Now, I could say how often do you get Bama at home getting points? That's very fair. And I think it'll be a down-to-the-wire game, and Georgia does not have the same level of skill they've had in past years. But and Stuckey talked about the other day, if you're Georgia, we discussed this. If you're Georgia, you didn't play well last time out against Kentucky, and you probably look at Bama and say, hey, this team last year beat us in the SEC title game and cost us a chance at a three-peat. Nobody's ever three-peat, or nobody, in 100 years is three-peat. If we would have beaten Bama, we would have won it all again. So there's that, angle of revenge here out for Georgia. Should be a good game. Should be a competitive game. I still don't quite trust Milroe as a passer. He's a great runner, but I will go with Kirby Smart with extra time to prepare here and what should be a fun game Saturday night, 7:30. That is a fun one. Quickly, the baseball. Looks like the Tigers are going to make it. A team 8 games under 500 mid-August. They're trading people. They just can't seem to lose. And they get the White Sox this weekend. And, these other teams, the Twins, as I'm recording this, the Twins and Marlins are playing just a ridiculous 12-inning game that I'm not going to stay up for, but it's going to be the Orioles have clinched the spot. The Yankees won the division Thursday night. You figured at some point they were going to wrap things up, and they did, an emphatic victory. So Orioles get a spot. Tigers looks like they're going to get a spot. Then it's the last spot is going to come down to Minnesota or Kansas City. Kansas City's got a major league up. The National League is where it's fascinating because the hurricane in Georgia is going to move. It did move the Wednesday and Thursday game the Mets and Braves were supposed to play to a doubleheader Monday after the Sunday game, after the regular season concludes on Sunday. So it's Arizona, it's Atlanta, and it's the Mets, 3 teams for 2 spots, all idle on Thursday. And Atlanta has Kansas City this weekend. Mets are in Milwaukee to play the Brewers. Atlanta's hosting Kansas City, so there's no guarantee Atlanta's going to get those games in. They might have to play a doubleheader Saturday, Sunday, doubleheader Sunday. Then if they get in the playoffs, they turn around and play, I guess, Tuesday or Wednesday. Just a wild, wild scheduling quirk, a wild twist to all of this. So I have a feeling, boy, I don't – if you ask me right now, I'll say the Mets and the Braves – both get a spot. Arizona's playing the Padres. I'll say the Mets and the Braves finally find a way to get the 2 spots, but I have no feel. Boy, it'd be a bitter disappointment if the Mets, after this great rally, this great comeback. I know it's house money, but 11 under in June, rally back, go into Atlanta with a nice little cushion, up 2 games. All you need to do is get a game. Then they get this weird scheduling quirk. Now you do avoid Sale, but boy, it'd be disappointing if the Mets didn't figure out a way to get themselves in the playoffs. I do think the Mets will win enough in Milwaukee and maybe split with Atlanta on Monday. And I think the Mets will get a spot. But it's going to be a lot of fun, and we will have playoff baseball soon. So it's it is just really, I know you can say March Madness, best time of the year. I can't argue with you, but this is just about as good as any time. There's almost too much going on in October. College football, NFL, baseball playoffs, it really is the best. One sport we will not be talking about going forward. We don't talk about it much to begin with. I went to the WNBA game on Wednesday to see Clark against the Sun. What those girls do to Clark, the cheap shots, the constant bullying, and I didn't even realize that she got poked in the eye in game one. And then somebody, and this is the girl that criticized her, said she didn't like Clark. And then she pokes her in the eye. And somebody asked the girl, hey, did you do it on purpose? And then the girl that asked the question is somehow the bad person in this whole scenario. That league, no league finds a way to spit in its food more than that league. My goodness. First of all, Clark got no calls whatsoever. I was sitting right there. She got mauled the whole game. They didn't call a foul. They didn't blow a whistle. The referee right in front of me, number 86, blew every call known to man. And if you're going to stack the deck, I mean, the old David Stern NBA, if you're going to stack the deck in favor of anything, you're going to stack it in favor of the superstar continuing their season. Clark got eliminated, so they're out. So nobody cares about the WNBA anymore. And boy, if you're going to rig it in one way, you rig it in favor of your star player so people watch your stupid sport, unlike the past 25 years and unlike the rest of the season. What an awful, awful product that league is. My goodness. They gotten a gift with this player who's actually given some life, some juice to this sport. And they just, like I said, they spit in their own food. They're all jealous. They're all, it's petty jealousy. It's whatever it is. And my goodness, it's just that league cannot get out of its own way. So that is our WNBA segment. Coming up next, it will be Chris Massera. We'll talk some Major League Baseball playoff scenarios, get his thoughts on the week in football. That is next. This is a Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. First time guest, professional sports bettor. You hear him on VSiN a lot. It is Chris Massera. Chris, what's up, man? Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, Will. This is great. One of the best times of the year. We're going to have afternoon sports or day sports or morning sports with baseball playoffs coming up, college football, NFL, and hockey and basketball is almost starting too. So this is probably the best time to be a sports fan of the year. I'm excited about it.
It is a lot of fun. We'll get into some football, but we are headed here for the final weekend of the Major League Baseball season. Most of the division races are pretty much sewn up, but we do have some of these wild card races that are exciting. We're talking before these Thursday games start, but the big story is the National League and the wild card and this Braves-Mets scenario where we're going to have a double header now on Monday. Before we get to handicapping, who you like to make it and what you think is going to happen, what are your thoughts here on how Major League Baseball has handled this this hurricane situation?
Oh, they've handled it like every other situation, like a complete disaster. There was an off day on Monday. Both teams were in the same city. They could have played the game. They could have played a doubleheader on Monday and totally alleviated the situation. And if you saw what the Tigers did, they moved up their game on Tuesday because of bad weather. I mean, these are the times of the year where this stuff happens. The weather's changing a little bit. I mean, you're not expecting hurricanes, but you have to be on top of this. And to know that these are the two, it's not just like it's Pittsburgh versus Cincinnati, and hey, if games don't get played, these are the two teams fighting for the wild card. And now even if they, they can get the games in, then it still puts these two teams at a competitive disadvantage, where one of them most likely is going to have to fly to the West Coast and play the next night on a Tuesday in a wild card game. It just doesn't make any sense. And why Manfred didn't step in and say, hey, we all see the weather forecast. This is a ridiculous size hurricane. It's coming. We both have off days on Monday. You're both in that city on Monday. How they didn't play at least one game on Monday makes absolutely no sense to me.
Who do you think is the odd team out here? We got D-backs who get a big win Wednesday night against San Francisco, when they desperately needed. And then we have the Mets and the Braves who, I think if you're a Mets fan, you're getting PTSD from that series a couple years ago when you went into Atlanta and you got swept. And you do have the Brewers this weekend. Brewers have nothing to play for, but ultimately, who do you think gets left out here?
Yeah, based on how things were going, I would say before the Diamondbacks got that win the other night, the Diamondbacks have been really faltering. They haven't been hitting, and their bullpen has been atrocious. But you are correct. The PTSD with the Mets is real. I thought for a long time it was going to be Atlanta was going to be the odd man out. And I know you have that juicy, I think it's 15-1 for them not to make the playoffs, which is obviously I'm hoping you've already hedged that somehow, but I don't know. I really don't know. I'm just excited for the people. I'm in San Diego, so the people in San Diego are very excited. We got the solid bullpen, the solid rotation. Odd man out. I'm still going to go that I think it's going to be the Braves. The Mets are going to have to get one of those two in a doubleheader, and hopefully they win the series. If you're a Mets fan this week in Milwaukee, get two out of three, because the Braves are still, you know, they still have a competitive disadvantage. They're one game behind both the Mets and the Diamondbacks. So I guess I'll go with the Braves as the odd team out.
Once the playoffs start, are you a believer that these teams that are struggling are going to continue to struggle? Or you say, hey, this is just a brand new slate. They get a breath of fresh air and there's no carryover when you go.
Well, how I'm handicapping the playoffs, and what I did was I kind of threw out. I'm not saying they have no chance to win. Obviously the Dodgers and the Phillies and the Yankees have a chance to win, and the Orioles, they have a chance. But the way I was watching the season unfold, and what comes around most to my attention in postseason baseball is obviously you have to have a decent starting pitching, but more importantly, who's going to get you the six outs at the end of the game when the game's on the line, when all the fans are nervous in the seats, when half the players are nervous in the seats, who's going to be able to get you that six outs? So what I did, and I played some World Series exact, is I tossed out all the big dogs. And I looked at the teams with the best bullpens. And if you go back and look, I mean, obviously Cleveland has the best bullpen. Bullpen ERA 2.59. They have a limited amount of blown saves. They have Class A, who has 47 saves. They have Cade Smith, unheard of guys. Cade Smith and Hunter Gaddis, ERAs to 1.9 and 1.59. Whips under one. Big strikeout guys, too. I mean, that's a solid bullpen. Granted, they don't have the marquee name starting pitching, and you know their bats aren't fantastic like the Yankees or say the Orioles, but I want to know who's going to get me six outs, and I think Cleveland's bullpen get me six outs. Same with Milwaukee's bullpen, 3.16 ERA. Devin Williams is back. He's only pitched 20 games this year. He's going to be fresh. These teams aren't the fancy, you know, high profile offensive teams with all the big names like say Judge or Gunnar Henderson or Otani or Hopper, but they have the solid bullpens. And I think there's a lot of value with these teams making a deep run. So for example, at the beginning of September, I put some World Series exactas together, Padres versus Cleveland, Cleveland versus Padres, Padres versus Houston, Houston versus Padres. And I got astronomical prices, like 90-1 San Diego to Cleveland, 125-1 Cleveland to San Diego. Same thing with San Diego, Houston, Houston, San Diego, 50-1, 70-1. So I'm thinking some of the better bullpens might step up, and in you know playoff time, the bullpens, you know, because they rotate these guys in so quickly. Anytime there's a little bit of trouble, they're bringing in, you know, the lefty righty matchup or the righty lefty matchup. So I think that the most important part of this playoffs is going to be the strong bullpen. And, you know, you're going to get some timely hitting, obviously, but a team like the Yankees and the Orioles, where their whole lineup is based on home runs, 17.5% of all of the Orioles and Yankees hits are home runs. You know, conversely, a team like the Padres or Phillies, it's only 13%. So they're such a boom or bust type of lineup. I just don't think that's going to set up well for the playoffs.
Anyone that follows you on Twitter at Chris Massaro sees you tweet very regularly about the Baltimore Orioles. Like you said, you had futures tickets on them. You have some thoughts on Brandon Hyde. You had a lot of strong thoughts on Craig Kimbrell. Can you relay those thoughts? And what are your thoughts on Baltimore here heading into the playoffs?
All right. So last year I was on Baltimore. I had them over the win total. I had them some great futures. And, you know, they totally fanned out in the playoffs, you know, got swept. So I was still on them this year because I figured all those guys are going to be a year older and they would have to do something with all these prospects to get some pitching. So they signed Burns, great signing, but they didn't do anything at the trade deadline besides Eflin. And they did absolutely nothing in the bullpen. And it's just so frustrating. I should have known that any team that was going to go into the season with Craig Kimbrell as their closer absolutely had no chance. And I just was screaming it the whole year that you had to just release this guy, and they just kept, you know, bringing him out there, I mean, that last outing before he got DFA'd was just a classic Kimbrel outing. And the fact Hyde even brings him in, it was even mop-up duty, but it was still, you know, he walks the first guy. The next guy, he hits the next guy. Then it's a wild pitch. Then it's an infield hit, fielder's choice, then a single, then another walk. And it's just so comical. The guy does the same routine over and over. You can't rely on him. And I don't understand why Hyde kept going to him. But I guess Hyde doesn't really have anyone to pitch, because no matter who they bring in, if you look at their bullpen ERA, 21st in the league, 4.16, so many blown saves. And when they don't hit home runs, they're not a team that, if they're hitting home runs, the whole team kind of goes with it and they hit a lot of home runs. But they're not a team that just strings a bunch of singles together, like, say, you know, a Padres or a Milwaukee. Some of these teams are just in the playoffs, you got to be able to move the runner along. And I know everyone swings for the fences and launch angle and all that, but the Orioles to me are just, it's a big conundrum, and I really don't think they have any chance to make a deep run in the playoffs. Now, of course, they've won the last two against the Yankees, when I really don't care if they win anymore. But I had a bunch of futures on them, but luckily, because I had great numbers on them earlier in the year, I was able to get a lot back on the Yankees to win the division. So, but either one of those teams, you know, it's home run or die. They don't have the bullpens, Yankees or Orioles, and I just don't see that being sustainable. Who's going to get the last couple outs for the Yankees? I mean, are you going to trot out Clay Holmes still? I mean, the guy's got 13 blown saves. That's like the most unheard of stat I've ever seen. How do you keep trotting him out there? What do you think about that? I mean, you're the Yankee guy.
They don't have a great option. They've gotten away from Holmes. But look, you put him in, they've been using him in the eighth inning more. He could blow the game in the eighth inning just as well as he blows it in the ninth inning. It's not like, you know, that's, you almost have to just, I don't even know if he makes the postseason roster. He probably will, knowing Boone and knowing Cashman, because they're so stubborn. But yeah, they don't have a great answer. I mean, they've gone to Weaver some more in these big spots. Leiter hasn't worked out. I don't know if, now the Cortez injury complicates things, because it doesn't make it as easy to transition maybe Heel or Schmidt to the pen. Not that Heel's a perfect fit, because he walks guys, but yeah, it's a major issue. It's not a, look, Mariano Rivera's not walking through that door. Even Chapman, before he had his years of explosions, you know, he was pretty solid those, you know, 17, you know, that 2017 season when they were in the playoffs, he was really good for the most part. It's just, they don't have great options. You're gonna have to sweat those three outs.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying, like, I really think this, I mean, obviously, the value is diluted now, but the Cleveland bullpen is just so solid. If they have a lead, they're probably going to close the game out. You really see them blow the lead. So, you know, depending upon how the matchups go, you know, how it all shakes out, who plays who. I don't see any reason why Cleveland can't make a deep run, just not because they're some great team, but I just feel like all the other teams are so flawed. I mean, the Royals haven't been hitting. Their bullpen is terrible. The Yankees, again, like we said, and the Orioles, they don't have the pitching. Houston is, you know, has been there before. So you kind of give them a lot of, you know, extra kudos for experience. They have a decent bullpen. So I just feel like the big guns are no sure. You know, the Yankees have been like the favorite by the American League the whole year. And I don't understand that number when I just don't see the pitching. I don't see the bullpen. And if you just kind of pitch around Judge and Soto as much as you can, they don't really have much else going on offensively.
Yeah, and if you play Dominguez, that's a lot of liabilities with Dominguez in the outfield and Soto in the outfield. It's not a great, you know, defensive outfield. Torres always makes you nervous at second, but like you said, there's no great teams. We'll move on to football here in a minute, but you are a Red Sox fan, I believe. What is your thoughts? That's another team you like to tweet about. What are your thoughts on the state of this franchise? I know, you know, the jerseys drive you nuts. The ownership drives you nuts. Where are you here with Boston?
Why is the ownership doing every single thing to, like, just, I don't know if it's like against the fans or just like they're trying to drive all the old fans. It's just like off a bridge. I just don't. First off, okay, I'm very, very aware of the marathon bombing. It was a horrific day. Anyone from Boston, I remember exactly what I was doing that day, and I was just, you know, you'll never forget it. And it's really cool that they wear the jersey, you know, once or twice a year around the marathon game. But to have that yellow and light blue jersey as now part of your regular rotation of jerseys makes absolutely no sense. It looks like the UCLA Bruins softball team. And I don't understand I love the Yankees for this. The Yankees wear the regular jerseys, the pinstripes at home, the grays on the row with no names on the back. That's how it's supposed to be. The Red Sox wear beer softball league jerseys every other day. It's a different uniform. They very rarely wear the home white uniforms. I don't even know what the road uniform is anymore. It used to be this blue. It used to be just the road grays with the name on the back. Like, why don't we have the road grays? I don't understand. What exactly is City Connect anyways? I just don't get it. That's one thing. Two, the ownership, they claim that they're one way. Dave Dombrowski, they trade everything. They spend all this money. Now they switch to the GM from Tampa. And it's like, oh, we're not going to spend any money. We're going to develop this. But they're not very good at developing their pitching staff at all. And now they're not going to spend any money. Well, I guess the reason they don't spend any money anymore is because every time they do spend money, it's a complete disaster. Trevor Story contract. I mean, the Chris Sale contract, I know he's having a good year this year, but that was the dumbest contract of all time. The guy was obviously not healthy at the end of the 2018 season when they won the World Series. He still had another year on his contract to pitch. There was no need to re-up him for $30 million a year. How he's doing what he's doing this year, I have no idea, but I can't get over that contract. So in all these contracts that never work out, they just get passed on to the fans. The cost to go to Fenway is the most absurd thing for the most uncomfortable stadium. So it's just one thing after another. I just do not like the ownership. A lot of the stuff they do at the park is just so over the top. I just want to go back to this watching the Red Sox game. And I'll tell you one thing, and this is a big complaint with a lot of people I talk to, and I used to never miss a Red Sox game. I never missed a pitch. I was just the most avid. 2004, I must have went to 60 games. But what they do now is they don't even let you get to the end of the inning before they go to commercial. And half the time when Neston comes back, they miss the first pitch or the first out. It's unbelievable the amount of advertising and commercials they have to shove down your face because the ratings for the Red Sox are just, compared to what it used to be, it's minuscule. So it's just a tough product to watch. They're always selling you something on Neston, not talking about the game. It's just a real brutal product to watch for the old Red Sox fan. They used to go to a million games and just love baseball. It's just not the same for me anymore.
Yeah, and the Yankees are guilty of it too. On a lesser scale, they still put out enough of a product where, hey, they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to get you to come to the games. But, you know, when the Bryce Harpers and the Machados and the Corey Seagers are available, I mean, when George Steinbrenner was alive and running the team, I mean, those guys were Yankees. And the Red Sox had to match suit, and they would have to go out and get the Schillings and get the Mannies and get the and just, kind of play tit for tat. And it was great. And it just I do miss that aspect of the rivalry.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's like, you were gonna get A-Rod, we were gonna get A-Rod, and then you got A-Rod, then we hated A-Rod. And we had to get Manny like you said, Schilling, and the whole rivalry back then was just, and I think this is why, because there were so many good players who didn't just hit home runs. Like, I was always afraid of Bernie Williams. Like, he was my most feared guy because he would always come up in a big situation and get a double. And it would just send the Yankee Stadium into a frenzy, It's just like now, it's just like such hit or miss where, well, if Judge or Soto doesn't hit a home run, well, you're going to just have to wait till they get up again in three more innings. It just seems like there's not enough of that. Grind it out, get on base, move them over. I'll never understand with the ghost runner thing. How do you not bunt the guy over? Like, I see it all the time. Teams not scoring that run. It's a free run. Just bunt them over and hit it in the outfield. It's unbelievable to me.
Yep, I think they're afraid of, hey, bunt them over, then, there's so much strikeout prone. And I will say, And I agree with basically everything you said. These guys throw so hard now, and there's so much spin. Like when you're throwing 100 and your slider's 93, the strikeouts are just going to happen more. So I think that's the fear. But no, I'm totally with you. The fundamentals, the base running in baseball, just day in, day out. You see, man, if you watch all these games like I do, you watch baseball for 3-4 hours a night, you'll see some of the stupidest stuff you don't do in Little League, like ground ball to short, the guy on second base runs to third with the ball in front of him, he gets thrown out at third. It's like there's so much emphasis on power, just hitting and pitching, that I think these kids, they grow up trying to just light up the radar gun, and they go to these showcases and they don't just play as much baseball in the backyard, and they just the fundamentals are certainly lost in the game.
I would 100% agree with you. I watch a lot of games, and my dad watches a lot of baseball, so I'm usually texting him during the games, and I ask him, I go, did the Orioles take infield, do you think they take infield anymore, because they cannot field. I mean, Jackson Holliday made a nice jump and catch the other day to save a run and the whatever. But, I mean, the kid can't field. Gunnar Henderson cannot field. I mean, and I remember back in the day, I remember when Wade Boggs came up and he was like, oh, he's not a great fielder. All he can do is hit. That's why he never came up. And the guy worked his ass off and ended up being like a multi-time gold glove third baseman. But, I mean, you don't see any of those plays anymore. There's a few guys, Arenado, Machado, making some of these plays. But most of these guys, you're right, they cannot field. The fundamentals of baseball are just out the window. You're right. It's a launch angle and spin rate and whatever. But I guess you're right. The 100 miles an hour pitches are harder to hit. I thought one good aspect that maybe I would bump up the Dodgers, even though everyone loves the Dodgers, but Kopech looked really good last night. He was above 100 the whole night, and he made quick work of the Padres in the ninth.
And but it's amazing how the Dodgers can't seem to keep these pitchers healthy too, with Glasnow and Kersh. I mean, you just name a pitcher, every pitcher goes down.
Who are they starting?
I mean, Flaherty and Yamamoto, I guess.
I guess, but I mean, after that,
you just piece together the rest.
Oh yeah, if you just look on their pitching depth chart, everyone else has a big giant. I mean, that Knack guy pitched pretty good, but
yeah,
Kershaw, even if he was healthy, he's a train wreck in the playoffs, and Bueller's pitching tonight. He hasn't been much of anything. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, do you think Ohtani's going to get a chance to throw a little bit?
I have a hard time seeing it. I mean, he's gotten his money, he's gotten his contract, but I don't know. I mean, what would you use him for? An inning or two a week? I mean, they're not going to push it. The last thing you want to do is just kind of ruin that arm coming off the side. But if he tells you, hey, I'm ready to go, and I want to pitch, I don't know how you don't use him. I just don't know what his role could be, because he's not going to be stretched out. He hasn't been pitching in like rehab games or anything. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think probably not. Because if you're a Dodgers fan or you're part of the organization and he's on the hill and all of a sudden he throws a pitch and he's injured and then he can't bat, I mean, that would be a total disaster for them. Because as important as Mookie Betts is obviously super important too. But I mean, Ohtani comes up, the opposing team is afraid of the guy. I mean, they're so afraid, you can see it. And I mean, he electrifies, especially at home games, he electrifies the crowd and the opposing pitcher's nervous. And I mean, it seems like he's, they batted him leadoff last night. It seems like he's always up. He's always up in the clutch situation. And I mean, he's just such a great player.
Who do you like in football this week? College, pro, take it whatever direction you want to go.
Okay, college football. I made a note of this. I tweeted it out a couple weeks ago. What's really, really impressed me about this Ole Miss team is the defense. I mean, obviously, Lane Kiffin, Jackson Dart, they have all the weapons. They're scoring a boatload of points. But they've only given up, 22 points for the whole year. Granted, they played Georgia Southern, Wake, Middle Tennessee State, and they shut Furman out in week one. But they've only given up a total of they gave up 26 yards rushing to Furman, 28 to Middle Tennessee State, 46 to Wake Forest, and 38 yards to Georgia Southern. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, this is a really solid defensive team. And they're going to play Kentucky this week, who loves to run it 65% of the time. And I'm not going to get involved in the side, but I really like the under 53 in this game. Ole Miss, they're going to score their points, but, Kentucky has a good defense. Obviously, they shut Georgia down pretty well. And I don't see this game going over 53 points. Kentucky is going to run the ball, and they're not going to gain much yardage based on this defensive front Ole Miss has. So that's going to be one angle I'm looking at, under 53. And I had this one last week. I played Rutgers getting some points against Virginia Tech, and they tried their best to blow the game. But I like them. I like them again this week. It's tomorrow. It's a Friday night game. You have Washington coming across the country on a short week. They lost to Washington State as their only real team they play. They beat Weber State, Eastern Michigan, and they beat a horrible Northwestern team who was only able to muster a field goal. They did get a safety and only scored 5 points. So I don't understand the line. I mean, maybe it's a little trappy, but I mean, I played Rutgers money line when it opened. And I just think it's a really tough spot. You're going across the country on a short week to play Friday night at Rutgers, who's a 3-0 team. I feel like that Piscataway is going to be rocking on Friday night.
How about anything NFL, anything like this week in any, and this will be the last one, any big takeaway, like, hey, I feel much differently about this team. This team is underrated. This team is overrated. Where are you at here with the NFL?
Oh, I looked at the games this week. I have no idea how I'm going to come up with five games for a circum. I mean, every line is so tight. I heard, you had Stuckey on yesterday. He was talking about the Ravens. I think it's a pretty good spot for them.
I agree.
But I can also see, I mean, do you really want to lay 2.5 or 3? I could see that game being like a 22-21 type of game. I heard humans talking about the Rams having a big coaching advantage over the Bears, and you're getting points with McVay. I mean, that Bears team, I mean, the hype every year is so – I mean, I'm not going to say that's a big takeaway because I kind of didn't believe the hype to start the year, and I was a big – I was against Caleb Williams instead of – I was more of a Jaden Daniels guy. And I'm hoping because I have some very juicy division plays on the Washington. I have coach of the year with Quinn and rookie of the year with Daniels, but I'm hoping that this coaching staff, and that's why I was on top of Washington early in the season. They have a really solid coaching staff. I mean, Quinn's, a 28-3 debacle away from being a Super Bowl champion coach. They have, Kingsbury's there as the OC. DC came over with Quinn from Dallas, solid. Linebackers coach, they have Ken Norton, they get Bobby Engram, wide receiver coach, they get William Gay and safeties coach. They just have a lot of ex-NFL guys, and I'm really hoping they can coach the defense up just a little bit, because if they have any improvement on defense, I really think this team could win the NFC East. I don't see any reason why they can't, because the rest of the division, you can be excited about CeeDee Lamb and the tush-push with Hurts, and A.J. Brown's going to come back. But the defenses on Philly, Dallas are just not very good. I mean, Washington's defense is obviously not great either, but those two other defenses aren't good. And I think the funny part about the division is that the Giants probably have the best defense. And if they just didn't have Daniel Jones, they might have a shot. But I have some juicy division props with Washington. And I have some nice exactas, Philly, Washington, Washington, Philly, that really pop. So I'm hoping Washington can continue. They looked really solid on Monday night. I thought Jaden Daniels looked like he was been in the league for 10 years. Every check down, every time to, go deep or take a shot, and he protects the ball. He was even sliding, not taking the big hits. Are you a Giants or a Jets fan?
I am a Vikings fan.
Oh, that's right. Vikings. That's right.
The soon to be 17-0 Super Bowl champion Minnesota Vikings.
Hey, listen, no one likes Brian Flores more than me. I think he's one of the better coaches
in
the league. I think he should be a head coach pretty soon. He has a little family connection with my family. I've got to meet him a couple times. I saw him after a Super Bowl win. He couldn't have been a more gentleman guy. So I root for him big time. So I'm very impressed with Minnesota. And I think the reason why Minnesota is having such a good year is not only because of Brian Flores, but just their entire coaching staff. It's just so many higher levels above, say, like a Bears coaching staff. Or what's going on? I don't know what's going on in Indy. Everyone thought Steichen was going to be a great coach, but I don't know. There's so many lower level staffs, like what the Patriots are doing. Everyone in the world saw that the Jets got gashed by San Fran and Tennessee in weeks 1 and 2. So what did the Patriots come up and do? They throw the ball. They had 6 rushing attempts going into the fourth quarter. It's like, I'm like, did the staff even watch game film from the previous weeks? I just think that's a huge advantage for some of these teams with really good, solid coaching staffs. You're able to coach up Sam Donald, It's not as difficult as it might seem. So that's great. I'm happy for you. Vikings 3-0.
We'll see what happens. I've been burned before, so my guard is certainly up. But Chris, this was awesome, man. You were great. We got to do this again more. Let everyone know where they can find you.
You can just find me at Real Gage on Twitter or X, whatever you call it. It's just, Gage is spelled G-A-D-G-E after the old dog that, you know, passed away a couple years ago. But that's my handle on X. I should be popping on with Matt soon. Probably not this Friday. Maybe next Friday on the VSiN contest show. So you can check me out on the contest show Friday nights on VSiN with Matt Humans.
Chris, appreciate the time, man. Thanks.
Thanks, Will. Awesome. Had fun.
That will do it. Thank you to Chris Massaro. Enjoy the weekend. Be back Monday. We will have playoff baseball to discuss. How fun is that? Exciting time of the year. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.